Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, Sirius XM Channel 83. No television today, but we will send all sorts of clips out on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube today. It is a radio-only day in our beautiful studio near Beverly Hills. It's great to have you in today. I love days like this. Bringing all sorts of fun guests on. My staff knows how much fun it is for me when it's sort of a radio-only day. We can screw off more.
You're a lot more fun on radio-only days.
I am a lot more fun. I'm a lot more giving.
Like substitute teacher, Colin.
I know. I really am. I'm screw-off, Colin. It's great to have you in. So I've always been a football guy. My first day I ever went on syndicated radio 15 years ago at another network, I remember replacing Tony Kornheiser, and I said, okay, I'm a football guy. However that lands for you, I'm a football guy. Not to say I don't love an NBA basketball or don't love a big fight. Baseball playoffs are fun. March Madness is great. But I'm a football guy, and I'm watching this free agent thing. And I think it's wildly entertaining. Actually, the team I thought did the best was the Green Bay Packers. They got three defensive starters and a starter on the offensive line. They went and got four starters, three for sure, and they didn't pay a fortune for any of the defensive guys. So I thought Green Bay had a really good free agent signing period. You know, Raiders obviously made a big splash. Cleveland made a big splash. But, you know, the thing about this business is if you do marginal homework, you can find out there's a lot of nonsense out there. This idea the New York Giants are going to they're going to detonate because Odell Beckham lost is laughable. They were awful with Odell Beckham. But I just want to remind everybody of this. I'm going to give you a bunch of teams that lost their star wide receiver. Now, in some cases, this receiver is not as good as Odell Beckham. But this receiver at least plays every Sunday. Odell Beckham's missed 16 games in 2 years. It's a real problem. He broke his ankle. He's a speed guy. So New England lost Brandon Cooks. He was their speed guy and their deep threat. What happened the following year? They won the Super Bowl. The Saints lost Brandon Cooks. What happened the following year? One play from the NFC Championship. The Rams lost Sammy Watkins. They got better and went to the Super Bowl. The Miami Dolphins lost their number one receiver, Jarvis Landry, 6-10 to 7-9, better without him. The Bears lost Alshon Jeffrey. They improved by two wins the following year. Philadelphia lost DeSean Jackson, comparable, you know, athletic and style to OBJ, 10-6 and 10-6. Calvin Johnson, who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Fame wide receiver, retired from the Detroit Lions. They went from 7-9, he left. They went 9-7 to the playoffs. The Patriots bailed on Randy Moss. They went 14-2 without him. Cincinnati bailed on Ocho Cinco, 4-12 to 9-7. Now, I think they had A.J. Green as a rookie coming in. But the point is, Dez Bryant left the Cowboys. They got better. Non-playoff team to playoff team. This idea that you lose a star receiver, dominant wide receivers often create an unhealthy imbalance, where the quarterback becomes paralyzed, especially in first halves, getting him the ball, getting him into the game, calming down his ego. We saw that with Dez Bryant and Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott got better the minute Dez Bryant left. Everybody was freaking out. Even in New York, the Giants were 4-12 in their last 16 games with Odell Beckham Jr. When he didn't play, Eli Manning spread the ball around more. So I don't ever buy. I think it's complete nonsense that if you lose your star receiver, you know, it's like anything. Let's say you have a sports car. And I've always compared wide receivers to sports cars. They're flashy. They're popular. But they're not as good when the weather turns. You can't have a convertible sports car out when it's snowing. And wide receivers, star wide receivers have never dominated the playoffs, even last year. It gets cold, it gets windy, you bracket them. I mean, basically, the Patriots took Tyreek Hill out of the game for Kansas City. And it's like a sports car. If somebody took your sports car from you, well, you just drive your SUV more. Maybe you'd lose a couple of great days, but it's not what you build your franchise around. You don't build your transportation around a Fiat. In most of the country, you need an SUV, a four-wheel drive, some car that can handle bad weather. You know, that's all a wide receiver is. It's a flashy sports car, which, by the way, is often great September, October, but by November and December, they erode in impact. So, yeah, I don't buy. The Giants' issue is not losing Odell Beckham Jr. The Giants' issue is they took a running back last year with a number two spot and passed on a quarterback. That's their issue. If Sam Darnold was a New York Giant, Odell Beckham would still be a New York Giant because he wouldn't be unhappy. And they'd be winning more games because they wouldn't have a quarterback who's a complete shot fighter who's unathletic. Darnold's young, but he's athletic. He's a gamer. Played very well at the last month of the season. So just you can do a little bit of homework. And this idea that Odell Beckham is going to change everything for anybody, he can't stay healthy. And frankly, you're going to feel like you have to get him the ball in Cleveland. And they've got great running backs, a great tight end, a great number two. There's a lot of mouths to feed in Cleveland. This will not go perfectly for them. Let me shift to this with the New York Giants. I find this is one of the great mysteries in sports. And, you know, sports is about superstition. But there's not very many mysteries in sports. We solve stuff in sports. Sports has finality. You win, you lose, you're in, you're out, you're traded, you get an extension. And not a lot of mysteries in sports. I think the greatest mystery in sports is why are the New York Giants so paralyzed by Eli Manning? Cut him. He'd save $17 million. The last 6 years, he's 38 and 57, and he has nothing left in the tank. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. The Colts moved off Peyton Manning faster than the Giants can move off Eli. Peyton was coming off a 10-6 season, got hurt, and they moved on to Andrew Luck. And Peyton Manning still had gas in the tank. The great Peyton Manning, Colts moved off him quick. The Packers moved off Brett Favre, who just got him to the NFC Championship. Still had a ton left in the tank, let him go. The Niners moved off Joe Montana, four Super Bowls. He had a 14-2 year, got hurt the following season, exit stage right. They moved off. Eli's a bad quarterback with nothing in the tank. Why are they terrified? The Colts moved off Peyton Manning after nine straight winning seasons. The Cowboys moved off Tony Romo to play Dak Prescott, a fourth-round quarterback, once he got hurt. Philadelphia was 11-5. Donovan McNabb led them to the playoffs. He had led the Eagles to the playoffs in 8 of 10 seasons. They trade him to the division rival Redskins. Yet the New York Giants can't move off Eli Manning. Remember when the Rams moved off Kurt Warner? He was like 14-2, got hurt, they moved off him. He eventually ends up with Arizona, leading him to a Super Bowl. I mean, Eli's got nothing in the tank. Favre had something in the tank. Peyton had something in the tank. Warner had something in the tank. Montana had something in the tank. So not only would you move off him and save money, he wouldn't come back to burn you. Like the Packers knew there was a chance Favre would come back to burn them. The Colts knew he was a free agent. Peyton Denver could come back to burn them. The 49ers, Montana, went to Kansas City. He would succeed. Marty Schottenheimer. I understand when teams are a little reluctant letting go of a star in division. Like, I don't want to face him twice a year. I get the Steelers saying, we're not trading you to the Ravens. We're not trading you to the Bengals or the Browns or the Patriots. That's too close proximity. I get that. And I also get when he's still a star player, it can be painful because the Steelers know Antonio Brown on Sunday, he's going to be lighting teams up. And people are going to say, oh, Pittsburgh. But Eli's got nothing in the tank. You'd save $17 million. the Colts were less patient with Peyton. Well, that's because of Andrew Luck. Yes, in some instances, there has been somebody out there. But there was for the Giants, too. Sam Darnold. And they were petrified to move off Eli. What does New England build their entire framework around? Always move off people early and never late. It is the great mystery in sports. What in the God's name do they owe Eli Manning? Retire his jersey, put him in the Ring of Honor, Seacrest out. It is amazing. Teams have moved off quarterbacks with all sorts of suitors and talent left, and they can't move off Eli. And they can't move off Eli is why they're a mess. They're not a mess because they lost Odell Beckham Jr. They were 4-12 in the last 16 with him. They're a mess because they are somehow terrified and paralyzed to move off the less talented Manning brother. The great mystery in sports.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, it's funny. Usually when coaches get a job, Goulet, you've been with me for years. I usually give a coach a year to get the act together. My kind of theory on coaches, I mean, Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year. Pete Carroll's first year at USC, 6-6. Even guys who hit it out of the park, college or pro. Tom Coughlin's first year with the Giants was a mess. Outside of Urban Meyer in college and Bill Parcells in the NFL, historically, it just takes coaches, you know, at least a year to a year and a half to get it together. You got to build a roster. You got to implement your culture. You know, I use the example all the time. Starbucks opened in 1971 in Seattle next to Pike Place Market. 14 years it took for them to become national, and another about 7 after that for them to become part of our culture. Amazon started by selling books. Netflix was selling videos, you know, DVRs, VHS, that kind of stuff, VHS tapes. So it just takes a long time. I contend Bill Belichick, even though he was very good early, you know, I just read his book by Ian O'Connor. He made a ton of mistakes in Cleveland. And I love Belichick, but man, he made a bunch of PR moves and personnel choices that were lousy. And so, but this year, John Gruden, myself included, we all sort of clobbered him from day one. And my takeaway on John was you can't be out of an industry as fluid that evolves as quickly as the NFL for a decade. I compare it to Silicon Valley. You can't be out of tech for 10 years. You could leave the post office for 10 years, come back, and you'd be fine. You can't leave tech for 10 years. You can't leave the NFL for 10 years, come back, and just crush it. Forget the fact that he has to build his own roster and implement his own culture. But, you know, I'm watching what the Raiders are doing, and I'm not talking just about Antonio Brown, but I think we have to officially now we can start judging him. Because here's what, if you're brutally honest about it, here's what John Gruden has done so far. So he came in, and he had a draft. Well, his 7 guys he drafted all played in at least 10 games. So there were no busts of everybody he drafted. May not have been the best draft. We'll see how Colton Miller pans out. But Colton Miller's going to start at right tackle this year. So it wasn't a disaster. He traded 2 stars. And you may not like it, but he accumulated more draft picks while he did that. He didn't get taken to the cleaners. He got all sorts of draft picks. The team played well down the stretch. And in this free agency period, between Tyrell Williams they got from the Chargers and Antonio Brown, they're much better perimeter. Trent Brown left tackle's overpaid, but he's a good player. LaMarcus Joyner, a safety, cleans up their safety position. They're now set there. So they got 3 first-round picks, 4 of the top 35. His first draft, all 7 players played a minimum of 10 games. It's not man overboard. Now, I still think he feels like more TV star than coach sometimes. Mike Mayock is a draft guy. Gruden acknowledges that's not his strength. His strength is coaching quarterbacks, football, and offense. But, you know, my entire career, I've always preach sort of patience on coaches. Even the guys that have hit it out of the park, Tom Coughlin with the Giants, Pete Carroll at USC, Nick Saban, that first year is choppy. It is choppy. Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin, choppy. Let's take a deep breath. With Gruden, they've got a ton of draft picks, nice free agency period, and Antonio Brown talked yesterday. Sounds like Gruden was pretty buttoned up.
Well, Mr. Gruden played everything in my decision with coming here. Obviously, he's an offensive guru. You get excited just talking with him. He got so much knowledge of the game, so he knows what it takes. And when you have a coach like that, you know, it's like your dad. You know, you want to be around him because you know he's not going to build you up for what you're doing. You know, he's going to encourage you on how you always could get better. And when you got a guy like that who always going to help you improve and grow, that's the type of guy you want to be around. And that's the type of guy you want to play for.
They're an interesting team. Now, their division's really hard. Kansas City's really good. And the Chargers are really good. But I think it's been too much man overboard for Gruden. He's had some real missteps. But you know what? Good free agency period. Accumulated a bunch of draft picks. Found his own GM. They played well down the stretch. They beat the Steelers. I will say this, they got smoked late in the year by Kansas City. That's no great crime. You know, Cleveland, the Browns, Baker Mayfield, everybody loves them. They got smoked by Kansas City last year. So, you know, that's okay. Kansas City, depending on when you played them, was no day at the beach. The Colts were pummeled in the playoffs by Kansas City. Let's just wait on Gruden a little, just a little. Because I think they're going to be fun. Now, if he moves off Derek Carr, I'm out. This idea that Derek Carr, you can't build around, 2 years ago before he broke his leg, he was an MVP candidate. And that was when Jack Del Rio at the time was his coach, a defensive guy. So I think you can absolutely, John Gruden and Derek Carr can be have a fruitful relationship and win a bunch of games. And if nothing else, offensively, between Terrell Williams and Antonio Brown and Trent Brown. And by the way, they got a lot of draft picks. You know Gruden's not putting all those draft picks on defense. Okay, Gruden's going to pick some offensive guys. You know that to be true. And it's a good wide receiver draft. It's a good offensive tackle draft. It's a good lineman draft. So Gruden's not spending all those picks. I do think his first two picks are going to be defense. I absolutely think he's going to go after a pass rusher. Somewhere in the first round, that I know he needs it. He wants to prove the Khalil Mack thing. It a couple times last year, they had leads and they couldn't get to the quarterback and people just bled the clock out on him. So they're going to get a pass rusher in that first round, one or two of their first three picks. But they got a lot of accumulation and draft leverage here. And let's not man overboard it yet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
It's funny right now. There's some huge brands in American sports that are really a mess right now. The New York Giants, the New York Knicks, the Lakers, the Washington Redskins, the Raiders, Chicago Bulls. And in almost every instance, without exception, it's because of ownership or management. They just don't have elite people up top. I mean, the Clippers bring in Jerry West, and they've just made a bunch of really smart moves, and they have a chance to make the playoffs, and they don't have a star. So, you know, I mean, they got the right coach, Lawrence Frank upstairs, smart guy, analytic guy. They steal Zubac from the Lakers, Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley. They got a bunch of mix of young and veterans, and they play their butts off. They play defense, and they're not gifted, but they're a playoff team. And you can sense their direction. They need to land a couple of really good athletes. Kawhi Leonard would be perfect for them. But like in the NFL, you need four things. I've always had this rule. Owner, GM, coach, quarterback. If you don't have a B-plus or above in three of the four, you're not an elite franchise. The New York Giants right now, coach, quarterback, GM, not elite. Dave Gettleman's not elite. Pat Shermer's not elite. And Eli's not elite. And the Mara family was always considered elite, but they've had a string of really bad coaching hires. Kansas City Chiefs, by the way, are 4-0. Hunt family, stable. GM, Brett Veach, A. Andy Reid, A. Mahomes, A. 4-0. That's why they're going to be in the AFC Championship for most of the next decade. Seattle, I would have given him four high grades. Paul Allen passed away, unfortunately, and they're in a holding pattern with the ownership. But Pete Carroll, John Snyder, and Russell Wilson are B-plus or above. That's why Seattle was able to rebuild quickly post that polarization of the locker room. The Chicago Bears, I still don't think they have great ownership or a great quarterback, but Ryan Pace is a great GM, and Matt Nagy's a really sharp coach, and they won their division. Philadelphia's 4-0. You know, Howie Roseman, Wentz, Doug Peterson, Lurie, the owner. Colts are 3-1. I don't love their owner. Chargers, you know, Spanos family takes some shots, but I love their GM. Quarterback's very good. Coach, we're not sure about, but that's probably why they didn't end up in the AFC Championship. You know, we're not quite sure if Anthony Lynn's the guy. I know they like him in-house. But the Giants are 1-3. So when you see these massive brands that should really, they have such advantages. I mean, let's be honest. A lot of young people that love football, scouts, they grew up Steeler fans and Cowboy fans. You have advantages as a traditional rival. I mean, if you're a young scout and the Lakers call to the Memphis Grizzlies and you're a 45-year-old guy, there's a romance about the Lakers. There's a romance about the Bulls. There's a romance about Pat Riley, Pat Ewing, and the Knicks. You have advantages when you are a major brand. I mean, that's why it doesn't take very long. I mean, USC football is a mess, but if you got the right coach, if Urban Meyer tomorrow said it's my job, you know, 12 games later, they're really good. It's always easy to turn around big traditional powers in college basketball, college football, even in pro sports, because there's just a lot of people that want to work for them. They're usually well-funded. They're in pretty cool cities. They take care of their employees. But it just goes to show you, we've got 7 or 8 massive brands in the country that are just a mess. And I almost all those instances, I would go to ownership or the management in the front. And I think the Lakers don't have, I'm not going to take a shot at Jeannie Buss, but you know, Magic's never done this before. Rob Pelinka's never done this before. So I think it's very hard to not do something and then you suddenly do something and you're great at it. It's like TV guys who do radio, they're fine at it. But if you've done television for 20 years and somebody says, host a national syndicated radio show, well, you're not a radio guy. You're a TV guy doing radio. You can be fine. You can be passable. You can stay on the air, but to be great at anything, you got to do it for a long time. It's just, you know, it's just the reality of everything. That's why medical school takes a long time. You know, they want 8-10 years of schooling and internships to even allow you a bad job in a hospital, in a weak hospital. Forget the great ones. Forget the great places in America. You know, John Hopkins, Cleveland Clinic. So, you know, I light at the end of the tunnel, I don't see it. Yes, it was funny yesterday hearing all these stories about the Cleveland Browns and how they're going to turn it around. I think they're going to be a really interesting team, but it was so funny because does everybody remember the Cleveland Browns were 7-8-1 last year? And we're blown out 4 times and we're 1-5 against playoff teams? I mean, it's not like they were just knocking on the door. They beat one playoff team. That was Baltimore when they had Joe Flacco, who was so bad he got replaced. By the way, they were 2-0 against Jeff Driskel. Those were two of their wins. They got blown out by the Chargers, blown out by the Texans, blown out by the Steelers, blown out by the Chiefs. And it's just amazing. You bring in a couple free agents. Super Bowl! I like their players, but they were 7-8-1, 1-5 against playoff teams. I want to go to Rick Bucher, Bleacher Report senior writer, Bucher and Friends podcast. Listen to him all the time. And a story this morning, Jeannie Buss considered moving LeBron. I suggested that a week ago and said I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world. So, Rick, I'm sure you'll get blowback from some people on this, but let's talk about the story itself. I don't think it's crazy at all because I don't see light at the end of the tunnel, and I think he's your best asset by far. What did you make when you heard it?
Yeah, I agree that it is certainly it's something they have to contemplate, and people around the league are saying it's something they have to contemplate. The difficulty is, what are you going to get back? And that's probably the most shocking thing that I learned is that other teams looking at acquiring LeBron are not looking at it like LeBron is the answer to all our problems. They would want to couch what they are offering. They don't want to offer up their best player because they're thinking at this point, Well, if we want to do more than what the Lakers did this year, we need our best player. Like, we need to have a quality player next to LeBron. We can't just give the farm for LeBron, because LeBron plus whatever we have left over is not enough to get us anywhere. And then we're basically sacrificing our entire franchise for a guy at 34 who now has had a, what people look at as that was a missing 18 games with that injury, presumably not being the same even since he's come back. It is raised an alarm. So, and here's the other part. And you, Colin, you're in LA, so you know this. It's a matter of, if you move LeBron, you can't, this is not Milwaukee or Charlotte or even Houston where you can say, well, we're going to trade and we're just going to get building blocks. If Kawhi Leonard shows up with the Clippers and you're the Lakers with building blocks, that is not going to sit well with Lakers fans. You have big price tickets to sell.
Yep.
You need a star that's going to sell them. And, you know, as I'm looking at it right now, I don't see the star that the Lakers could trade LeBron for that is going to carry the water. So that is the, that's the problem that they face right now, is can they get a star equal anywhere close to LeBron if they decided to move him? Because that has to be part of the package.
Yeah, I mean, my gut feeling is they get Boogie Cousins and maybe a Jimmy Butler. I just had Bill Orem on, and I said, you know, in football, you have seven rounds of draft, and half the league is undrafted. There's a massive volume. You can really turn around a football team very quickly. You get the right quarterback. You have a good GM. You can just do it fast. But in basketball, you got two rounds, and after about the 12th player, you run out of guys. There's about eight guys domestically a year that sign 2 and 3 and 4 contracts. They're, you know, prodigies. And you only have two rounds, and the second doesn't give us a ton historically. So the Lakers don't have shooters. I find it very difficult to believe in one offseason they're going to have a bunch of shooters. That's what the league is. I don't see light at the end of the tunnel. I don't with the Lakers. I think this thing has failed, and I don't see this beaming light that I'm close coming down the tracks. Do you?
No, it's the exact opposite. I mean, what has transpired this season, and especially, again, I hate to reiterate it, but the injury to LeBron really makes you question,
yes,
okay, is this the first sign of the downturn?
Yeah.
And if it is, where do you go from here? How do you build this quickly enough to take advantage of whatever he has left? Now, when it comes to the free agents out there, the one that intrigues me the most is Kyrie reuniting with him. And the reason it intrigues me is because the one thing that Kyrie wanted from LeBron in Cleveland was to be recognized as a peer, to be recognized as, I'm an equal and you need me. And this is an instance where they strike out on every other front. Kyrie gets to come into L.A. and it is clear that LeBron has no chance unless he has Kyrie by his side. Maybe, just maybe, that addresses it. But as of what I'm hearing right now, I've heard more about Kyrie in New York if he leaves Boston than rejoining LeBron. I heard that he's open to it, that it's not, you know, whatever discord or enmity there was between them, that has dissipated. But would he actually go so far as to join this particular ship? I'm not hearing that it's at the top of his list.
Segwaying to Kevin Durant, because you're in the Bay Area, I had somebody tell me yesterday that the Warriors believe, now this doesn't mean it's going to happen, but in the building of the Warriors, they think Kevin's gone. They think he's gone. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be, but they just don't have a ton of confidence at all. Confirm that? Believe that? What do you make of that?
I believe that. I haven't been told by people. I haven't been told that by people in the building, but from everything that I'm hearing around the league, that is the prevailing notion, and there's been nothing that's happened within the Warriors. I understand why the Warriors feel that way, even if he hasn't said anything directly to them, because particularly last year, the one thing that I noticed in the locker room was that Kevin and Draymond Green in particular were as they were butts. Like, any after a game, they were always one beheaded out to, I'll text you. They were going out to dinner. They were hanging a lot. I don't see KD particularly close to anybody. He has his locker in the corner, and his interaction with everybody else in the locker room, there's been an invisible force field that has gone up. And I understand that he and Draymond have mended fences to a certain extent, but the atmosphere around KD feels like a guy who's holding himself a little bit apart because he doesn't want to be emotionally invested in something that he's taking that he's going to depart from very soon.
I think it would be the craziest move ever. I swear to God, Rick, this is I can't even get my arms around it. The idea, Steph Curry is the greatest teammate as a star in the league. Kerr shields you from everything. You're going into a new arena. They're going to win this year. You could go 4-for-4. Yeah. I think it would be a tragic mistake. Listen, ownership runs sports. Dolan, that front office, how do you leave the best pro player organization in American sports? Yeah. I mean, the Bulls didn't treat Michael Jordan well. I remember Jordan fought with Reinsdorf from day one. Like, I've always gotten that. The Steelers banging their players. The Patriots, you know, they trade you early before later. Like, I can get great organizations where players move. I get it. Dan Gilbert, mm-hmm. LeBron, I get it. But I do not get leaving the Warriors.
This is why, when it comes to KD, because KD will never be fully embraced by the Warriors. He will never, by the Warriors fan base, by the culture, whatever you want to call it, he's always going to be the guy who joined the band. And for him, there is, for the same reason that he left OKC and he went to Golden State and, you know, everybody said that was crazy. You can't do that. KD has demonstrated he's going to do what he wants to do. And I believe in terms of fully exploring what he's capable of doing as a player, that there's, and as a businessman, that there is okay, so what's the next frontier?
Jeez.
And returning the Knicks to some level of glory is the next frontier. I mean, I think you're looking at it, you're looking at the money in the bank, which is the Golden State Warriors and championship.
I like money in my bank.
I understand that. But you know what? KD has so much money in the bank now, or he's had the money in the bank. And I always go back to Aaron Rodgers. The comment he made after winning the Super Bowl, and he said, "Is that all there is? I got the thing that everybody says I have to have, and this is it? Like, this is it? What else is there?" And it doesn't mean that Aaron or KD don't want to win more championships, but it's a little bit like, okay, now I've experienced that. What else is there for me to experience? And again, I kind of turn it on its head, and I look at, if you go into New York and you just get New York, if you get the Knicks to the finals, you don't even have to win them. Just get them to the finals. Which, by the way, if KD compares himself to LeBron, he says, "I go to the East. I'm working with Scott Perry and Steve Mills, not Tim Dolan, but Scott Perry and Steve Mills, and they can put a couple pieces around me. I can do what LeBron did. I can at least get to the finals. And if I get to the finals in New York, I'm going to be a god in a way in New York that I never will be in the Bay Area."
Yeah, at some point, winning matters to me. Jesus.
Well, look, and I think, and it's not to say that it doesn't matter to KD, but it's your part in that winning, Colin. You're at the forefront of what Fox and FS1 has put together. Yeah. They're riding with you. There's a lot of other people on that train, but they are riding with you. You're in the driver's seat. KD wants to be Colin. That's what he wants to be. He wants to be Colin Cowherd somewhere. He'll never be Colin Cowherd with the Golden State Warriors.
Those words will never be uttered again in America.
I really stretched that analogy. But you know what? Once I was in, I couldn't stop. I had to keep going.
Bukes, it's great talking to you. Good story. Good stories on the Lakers and LeBron. Thanks, buddy.
You got it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you like.
He was the president for the Eagles for almost 20 years, Browns CEO, recently a Falcons front office consultant, and a friend of the show, Joe Banner. Joe, you know, free agency period, there's a little momentum in the league now. The Eagles did it a couple years ago. The Rams did it last year. Teams appear to be a little less reluctant. For years and years, it was kind of thought of as silly money. Why do you think now we got a little momentum? People are stepping up, even good teams.
Well, I think the reason is the growth in the cap. It changes the smart strategy on how to build a team when you have an excess amount of cash available, third year in a row, over $1 billion the first day of free agency, when you're trying to build a team in a tight cap. When you're building a team in a tight cap, draft picks are invaluable, and trying to keep all of your good players is impossible. When you're functioning in an environment where there's an excess amount of cash and cap room, then keeping your own players is doable, as well as adding crucial free agents. So I think the strategy, all the smart teams started doing this a year or two. The other teams are starting to catch up. But the ability to build a team with a mixture of free agents and draft picks versus what used to be primarily draft picks is totally dictated by these increases in the cap.
Former team for you, the Eagles, Howie Roseman has been aggressive. You know, I the Colts at $100 million haven't done much. They've re-signed some of their own guys, finished second, I think, on Preston Smith. Niners went out and got Dee Ford. Is there a move in particular you liked so far?
Well, you know, I like a couple of the moves the Eagles made, ironically.
Yeah.
I think DeSean Jackson has a chance to come back and make a difference. And, you know, it's under the radar a little bit, but Malik Jackson, if he can play like he did in 16 and 17, and you put him next to Fletcher Cox, are you kidding me? Who has two guards that can block those guys? So, you know, those were two deals that they didn't give up a ton, and they got some incredible value. I mean, Malik Jackson is averaging $10 million a year. I don't mean to, you know, belittle $10 million a year, but, you know, when you look at the other deals that are out there and what we saw him capable of for two of the last 3 years, and probably really five of the last 6 years, you put him on a team next to Fletcher Cox, that could be an incredible combination. And listen, I'm just a big believer. We've discussed this before. Get great quarterback play, dominate both lines of scrimmage, and you are going to be one of the best teams in the league.
Yep.
There are a few teams that have built like that. I mean, Cleveland has done that now. The Eagles have done that now. You know, teams like the perennial good teams like the Patriots have always been strong in those areas. The Patriots do it in a different way. They don't want to lead the league in sacks. They want to lead the league in forcing the quarterback to have to step up, and there's no place to step up. And they get players that are incredibly effective at doing that. So, you know, there are a group of teams that are focused on that. And there are other teams, you know, like to me, the Jets, they signed a lot of players that I actually really like. But they didn't really improve either line that much.
Yeah.
So they'll be better. They'll be better. I think the coaching will be better, and at least the offensive side, I think Donald will get better. But if they put the same amount of money into really creating dominant lines, they'd be a much better team than I think they're going to be. So I always look at the teams that are focusing on trying to dominate those lines of scrimmage and have a good quarterback. And too much of the money, in my mind, is being spent differently than that. Listen, that's how the Colts leaped forward last year. They rebuilt an offensive line in 1 year that went from one of the worst lines in the league to one of the best lines in the league. In fact, I think you could argue the best line in the league. And I just think they looked for some opportunities in the defensive line here that didn't emerge, and I don't think they're done. And I certainly think you'll see them address it in the draft. And if they fix that, they'll be as good as anybody out there.
What I worry about with Cleveland is Freddie Kitchens had never been interviewed. I mean, really, he was only a coordinator for 8 games. And you, OBJ, you know, you can ask Ben McAdoo and Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman. He can be a little difficult to coach. You've got big personalities now. Sheldon Richardson never quite played up to his contract. John Dorsey himself has a strong point of view. Freddie Kitchens is a kid compared to that. Do you worry that he could be a little engulfed by all of it?
Well, I do, because if you were going to put together that kind of a cast of characters, you'd want an incredibly strong head coach.
Yes.
And I actually think under the circumstances, it was reasonable to give Kitchens the shot, but I would not describe him as an incredibly strong coach. And you really only gave him a partial list. I mean, Njoku, Landry, Hunt. I mean, there is a lot of players in Mayfield. There's a lot of players in the team that will need some strong guidance. But listen, I go back to my basics. I think Mayfield's going to be very good. I think their lines right now are as good as anybody in the league. You add Vernon to the line they had. You add Richardson, if they can get him to show up on a regular basis, stay awake in meetings and play reasonably hard, and they've got some depth there. I don't see many offensive lines that are going to be able to block that group. So that's going to make the whole rest of the defense better. You saw the Eagles do that and ride it to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. So I do think that they have some real challenge in managing the group. I think that was what Dorsey did in Kansas City. It didn't sit so well with the people there and how they approach the game. And I think that's to be determined. I think they'll be good. The challenge in the NFL is getting from good to great, and the very thing you brought up may be what keeps that from happening there.
Freddie Kitchens, yeah. You know, Joe, the Niners moved off Montana, and the Colts moved off Peyton, and Green Bay moved off Favre. Philadelphia, Donovan McNabb, 8 out of 10 years, had been to the playoffs. They moved off him. Kurt Warner had a lot of football left. Rams moved off him. For some reason, the Giants appear to be terrified to move off Eli Manning. Why? I don't understand it. The other thing is, Joe, is he's not going to come back and burn you. I think he's kind of done. I am shocked by their paralyzation moving off Eli. Are you?
Yes. I mean, I've been as harsh on Dave Gettleman on interviews I've done and tweets that I've put out, and I almost feel a little bad, but I just am completely baffled. I mean, this week alone, he said, we have a plan. No kidding. Everybody has a plan. It's a good plan. He said he admires the way the Chiefs have done things. What is he doing that resembles anything the Chiefs have ever done?
But by the way, they moved off Alex Smith, who was getting them to the playoffs. They moved off.
Right. By the way, I worked with Andy Reid for 14 years. I know exactly what he thinks. It's nothing like Dave Gettleman is doing in New York. And then he announces, by the way, that he's going to, or at least it was interpreted as, that he's going to move to a more run-oriented offense that he's comfortable with. So you have a team now with an old quarterback and nobody lined up to replace him. You have a coach and a GM who apparently want all players who create no discomfort in the locker room at all. Not really bad players, but, no, I mean, Vernon. I mean, you know, so he isn't perfect. Are you kidding me? You're running out of the team a strong defensive pass rusher who's only 28 years old. So I just have no idea what they're doing. And then if you break down the individual evaluations, decisions they've made in the last year, well, were they going for it last year or not? You trade a draft pick to get Ogletree, who can't cover anybody, who's making $10 million a year, but you're building a team for the future? You can win and rebuild at the same time? Of course you can, but there's nothing you're doing that indicates you're going to be able to do that effectively. And then the Eli thing, I mean, you know, listen, it's great to be loyal to a player that's given you so much, but at some point you've got to start to make the decisions that are in the best interest of the 50 and 60 players who are standing there right now risking their health and well-being every day they're on the field.
It's amazing. You know, Joe, Arizona has already paid the money to Josh Rosen. He's $2 million a year for 3 years. I think he, as a thrower, stacks up with almost everybody in this class. Patriots have 12 picks. Giants have 10 to 12 picks. I am shocked that Arizona's not getting calls for Josh Rosen. I mean, this is not a great quarterback class by anybody's draft analysis, and you don't have to pay him anything. He's a $2 million a year player. Boy, I got to think, if I was in New England, a second or a third round pick, I'm surprised there's not. I mean, if you were in the league and you had, I mean, I think he's as good a player as a Teddy Bridgewater, potentially, a Ryan Tannehill, a Andy Dalton. I mean, Jared Goff didn't look good his rookie year. He bounced back when he got the right offensive coach. What do you make of the Rosen situation?
So, first of all, I agree he's as good or better with more upside than everybody you just mentioned, than maybe Bridgewater. I was a Bridgewater fan in that draft. I think he played pretty well for Minnesota before the injury. And he does throw the ball extremely well. What we don't know is there were all these stories and rumors last year about what went on with him in college and how committed he was and everything else like that. There may be more believing of that stuff than we realize happening around the league. And, you know, the Patriots are purists about quarterbacks. You've got to be a genius. You've got to be an incredible leader. You've got to have every. So I think if they actually market this guy, they will get a decent draft pick back in return from him. I'm not sure it's a one, because the teams that are most likely to want him have really high ones, and they may not want to give that up. But I actually think if they market him, that this will correct itself, and they'll get solid compensation. But right now, as far as we can tell, they're just kind of sitting there and not doing anything, and who knows, maybe keeping him. Maybe the Kyler Murray stuff isn't real, or maybe they're planning on picking Kyler and they're just waiting till a later date to market Rosen, which doesn't make any sense to me because teams like the Redskins that may have been involved won't be involved anymore, at least for the moment. So it's a little mystifying, but I think if they market him and they truly are going to pick Murray, that they'll still get a good deal for Rosen.
Yeah. You know, Joe, love having you on the show when you're in Los Angeles, or we set up a camera where you're at. I love your insight, and I really appreciate you stopping by today.
Well, I always appreciate being on. It's a pleasure talking to you. Thanks.